Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. I'm in Pittsburgh. Padres, Pirates, another big series. They're all big right now. They're big for the Pirates. Where would you like to start, Ryan?
Padres did what they had to do in the last series. We talked in our last episode about how important it is to beat bad teams. And after looking really not very good on Friday night, Padres rallied, beat the Rockies twice. Wasn't particularly close Sunday, 10-2. To me, this is a step. And I know that this sounds so silly to talk about, but you got to do this. This is what good teams do. And, you know, the Padres remain, them and the Diamondbacks, the two hottest teams in the National League because they've been able to beat bad teams after playing some pretty good ones.
Yes. And, I mean, wow, Diamondbacks are super hot. Wow. You know, not all these teams will stay hot. Maybe it'll be the Padres that fall off, or maybe it'll be the Padres. And I think there's signs that it, you know, the Padres will be one of the teams hanging on at the end as they sit here right now. What are they? They're in the second playoff position, a half a game up on the Diamondbacks. Is that what it is?
Yes.
So again, ad nauseum, I'm always talking about good teams beat bad teams. Now, the Pirates, are they a good team? Are they a bad team? Padres don't see Paul Skenes. They see some other guys that have pitched okay. They see some guys that haven't pitched very well. The Pirates were not a good team last year, but they beat the Padres 5 out of 6 times, including a sweep of 3 games here in the smoke of the Canadian wildfires last June. And it was like, man, do I remember that series vividly. The conversations I had with players, including Manny Machado, the just – it's one of those you at the time you go, is this slipping away now? And then hindsight, you go, yeah, that series was indicative of the 2023 Padres. It was a huge thing. I've talked to the players about it. I believe they've responded to your point, Ryan, beating teams they should. And I believe that will be their mindset for this series.
Sure. Are the Pirates a good team? They're a team that added and subtracted at the deadline. Very, very Padres-y thing to do. You know, they went and they got better at a couple different positions, but then they traded their big offseason signing, Martin Perez, to the Padres.
Right? Like, that is where they're at. I would think if you're one of their fans, you kind of go, yeah, Ryan, yeah, exactly. Like, well, what are we here? They want us to come out and fill this ballpark or, you know, be more than 4,000 people. They want us to be excited about the Pirates again when someone besides Paul Skenes is pitching. You're 56 and 55, right there at the wild card kind of. Right. Wait, well, the organization has to take a bigger view. And how are we going to get better? I don't know that what they got for Martin Perez is like a part of their future big time, but it did save them a little bit of money and every dollar counts for the Pirates. Yeah. It's look, that speaks to what I said at the start. It's a big series for the Pirates. They'll be a losing team if the Padres come in here and take 2 out of 3.
Right. I had that thought too, when the Padres were playing the Nationals in DC. They were a team that I think thought that they were maybe competing for a wild card spot and then have just cratered since. You're right. As important as it is to win, it's also important to sort of eliminate other contenders. And, you know, if it's too much to assume a sweep or to expect a sweep, but say a sweep from the Padres here knocks the Pirates that much further back, right? Yeah. It's another team you don't have to worry about in September.
And by the way, that's what it would take for them to have a losing record. I want to correct myself. I said if the Padres won 2 of 3, the Pirates would have a losing record. No, they wouldn't. They're 56 and 55 now. So if the Padres came in, did what they did to the Rockies, which is what you and I have talked about. It doesn't have to go 2 out of 3 every time. But what we're talking about over these 5 series, which will end with the Rockies. Again, it's a bookend of the Rockies. It started with the Rockies. It'll end with the Rockies 2 weekends from now. In these 5 series, if they can win 10 of 15, which is 2 out of 3 average, that will then put the Padres what? Up, they'll be 13 games above 500. Somebody, they will have taken care of the Pirates. Somebody else will have fallen off. You know, gets around the middle of August and we're talking about like a 3-team race for the final wild card spot or the final 2. And, you know, I think they'll be in good position if they can do that.
Right. And obviously that's a big if. I mean, one of the reasons why we're talking about taking 2 or 3 from the Rockies is an accomplishment is because historically this is not something this team does easily, right? They don't just steamroll bad teams. Yeah. And so the Pirates certainly are.
And I think they would blanch at that because they want to be thought of as the 2024 Padres, but that's totally legitimate, Ryan. Like the 2022 team wasn't great. As a matter of fact, at this time of year, the 2022 team that ended up going to the National League Championship Series was playing poorly. They were a middling at best team. Now, they built this big lead, and they had just gotten Juan Soto and Josh Bell, and there was confidence, but it was waning. 2021, last year. Like, I don't know that we need to go back much further than that. You are absolutely correct. It's big. And then even take in the 2024 team, and I don't know where you want to go, but, you know, is it starting pitching? Is it guys that have been stepping up, like David Peralta? Will they continue? I mean, when will injured guys come back? Joe Musgrove, great day yesterday, you know, pitching against low A guys, but nonetheless, the strikes were there. That's what you're looking for. So where would you like to go next, Ryan?
I'd like to talk about David Peralta a little bit. Yesterday's game, you know, he has a leaping catch at the wall that may have robbed a home run. He hits a home run himself. Was it Jackson Merrill or somebody said after the game, you know, he's playing like he's 25 years old out there. Now, looking at his slash line, it's not great, right? He's still hitting 233, OPS is 639. But this is a guy who has a couple of homers in his last few games. He's somebody who is at least bridging the gap.
Absolutely. And that slash line, if you go back and you remember that there was this time, and I forget when it was, but Boston, I remember writing about it at the end of June. Like, this is a great guy who is contributing to the team. And if he's gone in a couple days, you know, because he has one hit in the last, you know, 10 games, and he knew it. And ever since then, it's not great. I wish I had the numbers. I should have done that. It's not great, but it's big time contributions from David Peralta. And you put it well, he's bridging the gap.
Right. And again, I'm not saying David Peralta was the reason why they won 10-2 yesterday, right? But if that game goes differently, if that ball goes over the fence, if that game goes differently and they lose 2 or 3 of the Rockies, we're singing a little bit of a different tune today.
You don't know. I took off this weekend, had some weddings. It was great. Thank you. I didn't see where the Rockies bullpen was at, but I know since we're familiar with them that the Rockies have some really good relievers and then they're crap. All right. Mm-hmm. And when the Rockies get a good lead on you, they're a tough team to beat. They don't get the lead on you that much. That's their problem. Right. And then, you know, but so yes, absolutely, Ryan. It was 1-1 in the fifth at that time, yeah, right? Yeah. Like, I've gone over all the games, obviously. I think it was 1-1 in the fifth, and who knows what happens after that.
Right. Is this a guy who has a role on this team even when Fernando Tatis returns, do you think?
He does. Now it becomes more competitive, but I think he has a role. But then is it also, again, is it Bryce Johnson, who, by the way, kudos to Bryce Johnson for stepping up since they got the kid from AAA in the Yankees, Woodbridge, is that? Kudos to Bryce Johnson. David Peralta has a role. Unfortunately, it's not like pitch running. Right. You know, and as you start to now, does he have a role where, because they have an abundance of infielders and poor Tyler Wade, who's been a contributor all year, is he aced out because they do want to have the Bryce Johnson there? I mean, it will get interesting. It's a really good question. I think he has a role because of what he provides, and he knows how to give you again, the cliche, the pro at bat. But that is what's so cool this year, is you are watching so many pro at bats, and David Peralta is a guy who gives you those. I don't know how much this guy's got left in the tank, but like, if he's going on fumes now, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and again, he's not Donovan Solano, right? I mean, he's not somebody who gives you.
That's one of the funniest things and the truest things that anyone has ever said. It's funny because it's true. He's right. Not Donovan Solano. And people who don't know might be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. And comparing these 36-year-olds. But, you know, he's not Donovan Solano, but he does have a clue. This is a guy who, again, on a Padre team of 4, 6, 8 years ago, maybe he's playing every day. Yeah. Right? But I mean that in terms of. Yes. He has the ability to be a big league regular, just not on a good team and just not on this team. And I don't know, something to consider, I think, too, is, you know, Tatis, we think, can be back in what?
September, late August. I don't want to say that the timeline's been pushed back, but, like, you know, he's not doing stuff that would lead you to believe that it's going to be mid-August, all right? Yeah. But they do think that he needs a 7 to 10 day rehab. So once he does start, you know, really ramping it up, it could go pretty quick. But talking to people over the weekend and then just before I left, the word September was used.
And if that's the case, they don't really need to make a decision on a roster spot until the playoffs, right? In theory. Because again, you can expand your rosters in September, correct? You can't expand it like you used to, right? You can't call up.
You can do it enough to do what you're talking about.
But you can keep Tyler Johnson and David Peralta and Fernando Tatis and just kind of figure it out, right? Yeah. Let's talk about another injured Padre, Joe Musgrove, further cementing Joe Musgrove's place into San Diego's hearts, by the way. He got screwed over by an airline. And as a result, instead of pitching at double A, he was pitching at single A for the Storm. Looked like he pitched fairly well. I saw some highlights. He looked like Joe Musgrove. But again, he's going up against high A guys. How important is this step in his recovery?
Yeah, he's worse than that. He's going against low A guys. But,
low A guys, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yes, no, you that's you were still in the mode of what it used to be there as you were thinking about David Peralta on the 2013 Padres. No. And not that long ago, the 2018 Padres, he would have been going every day. Yes, that's why I say it was like he threw like 35 strikes and 45 pitches or something. Right. And there, end of story. Obviously, they're looking at movement. But supposedly everything was great. And Joe will undoubtedly, as he arrives in Pittsburgh probably today, that he will undoubtedly be pushing, hey, that's good. I'm ready. Now, you did 40-something pitches. My understanding is the Padres would like him to be capable of doing 75 when he comes back. So there is the possibility that he gets a, like, you know, he's a five-inning guy. He can do that. And that's not a jump you probably make. And with you got an off day you today, right. Now you have – then you have an off day after the 9 days in a row, and then it's 18 in a row. That's when they need Joe, is 18 in a row. They don't necessarily need him now. So,
right.
Yeah.
And they don't need three innings from him. I mean, to me, that's the thing too, is you need to be able to depend on this guy down the stretch. And – bringing him back to pitch a few innings, you know, that's something Adrian Morahone can do, right? That's something Brian Hoeing can do once or twice. If it means Joe Musgrove, when he returns, is somebody you can slot in every fifth day.
If you needed him to do that because you, whatever, you didn't get Hoeing, you didn't get Martin Perez, you and then we'd all be like, okay, well, maybe this will work. Look, they don't have to do it. So, and it has seemed to me that everyone but Joe, while they're not ruling it out, and they're still they're going to talk to Joe, and kudos to Joe. Like you know, if you don't realize it, maybe the reason Joe makes 20 mil a year and has a no hitter and pitched one of the biggest games in history in the playoffs against the Mets is because Joe sets unrealistic goals and sometimes he reaches them. It's right. What all the greats do. So right. Kudos to Joe for being like, I can come back and pitch right now. But he also has been sure to say he does not want to come back and put them in a bad way.
Also, the time frame changes, and I don't know whether somebody would actually acknowledge this in the clubhouse or not, Kevin, but they're not fighting for their playoff life, right? I mean, in their head, nobody has October vacations scheduled at the moment. Like, you know, this is a team they're going to, if they're going to go as far as they'd like to go, they're going to need him pitching in October. And to a certain
extent, have to be, yes, yeah. I think if people will like think about what you said, that's exactly what it is. Of course they know they have to earn a playoff spot.
Right.
But and especially the front office, manager to some extent, right? Coaching staff, Niebla, they got to be thinking about, okay, how's this going to shape up? That's why it'll be interesting. Look, they're 61-52, right? So that's 13, 49 games to play, right? We can all figure it out. What do you think they need to get to? 87, 88 wins. Okay. When they get to a certain point and it looks good, how will they start setting up this pitching? That'll be interesting. That's a conversation for another time. But to your point, yes, absolutely. Has to be the big picture. At 9 games over and playing the way they are, right? Okay. They seem to be pretty set up. Like they're probably going to make the playoffs. Let's say this. If they don't, it's a collapse.
Yep. Well, this isn't like last year. And again, the only thing I can compare it to for the sake of our podcast is last year when you and I were both talking about this too. Last year, every game from July 4th on mattered, right? Not to say that this year it doesn't.
I got you.
But you're talking about, you know, when they make the playoffs, as opposed to if they bust their humps and everything goes right, and then maybe they slip into the playoffs. Like, there's a difference.
Yep. And that's the feel that this season has. And look, wrote about it a little bit. I think it was in the last newsletter before I took the weekend off. The players have been talking about it for a little while. The reason that it's not just the results and it's not just necessarily the way they're playing, but also the focus that they have, the players, the guys who have to go out and execute, appears to be the absolute correct place. And that is like, all right, who's up? All right, Bailey Falter, left-hander. What do we need to know about him? Don't even know who we're facing. Of course they know who they're facing. They know they're not facing Skeens. You think it's not the first thing they thought about when they're going to Pittsburgh? But in terms of like their focus, I think it's why the Dodgers weren't a big deal. Like, you know, their focus on the guys on the field is in the right place.
Yes, exactly. You're 100% correct. Kevin, let's talk about Kyle Higashioka for a second.
Okay.
You know, every time he hits a ball to the exact same spot in left field, which it seems like he does, I sort of silently remind myself, like, hey, like, this guy was part of the Juan Soto trade too. And we talk a lot about the starting pitching that they got, the holes that they were able to address when they traded Juan Soto. But this is a guy who's been, I think, beyond their wildest expectations in terms of a catcher, and is now sort of, what, 50% of the time their guy. I'll take an 800 OPS out of my presumed starting catcher, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. And then what giving Luis Camposano rest seems to have done also in both his defense, but especially his offense. That's not how they look at it, but it's very easy for us to quantify that Luis has done better since he's become sort of the second catcher. And Higashioka and to the trade. I mean, look, you're never going to get Juan Soto back. Yeah. But you got a backup catcher who definitely made your platoon better. You got a starting pitcher in Michael King, who, without question, that was a good get. There's a reason he was the centerpiece of that trade from the Padres' perspective. Randy Vasquez, who has been a very good number five starter, all right? Johnny Brito may or may not, right? Like, help you again this year and down the road. They're certainly counting on that. And Drew Thorpe, who helped you get Dylan Cease, was the centerpiece for the White Sox in terms of getting Dylan Cease. So that is a – man, the onus is on the team giving up a Juan Soto. For the Yankees, like, virtually a no-brainer, right?
Yeah.
We are getting Juan Soto to help us try to win the World Series in 2024. For the Padres, it's – we got to go watch Juan Soto, maybe help the Yankees win the World Series or, you know, get to the World Series. We got to get the players that are going to make us better. We can't screw this up. We got to, like, find four or five guys. And it appears so far that they've done that.
Yeah, and that, again, there's some calculus in there that we've talked to death on this podcast, so I don't want to get back into it. But, again, the need to cut payroll, the likelihood that he wasn't going to come back beyond 2024. Right. It's not like by keeping Juan Soto, you kept Juan Soto. No, you got him for a year. Right. That to me, it's I find Kyle Higashioka, who by all accounts seems like a really neat guy, Southern California kid. I find him to be one of the really good stories on this team. And this team has a lot of really good stories so far this year. You know, it's not Jerks and Profar, but my goodness, it's close.
It's the kind when you look back, you as a fan could remember fondly.
Yeah.
And you hope, I hope for fans' sake, that you remember it as a team that went far in the playoffs, as opposed to for a while you really looked back fondly at that 2010 team.
Yeah.
But you know, that now, by the way, would have made the playoffs. And who knows? But yes, Ed, you're right about Higashioka, and I just think that is something, and we could talk about it down the line. Like, I don't believe AJ Preller's on the hot seat anymore in terms of now, if they don't make the playoffs,
right?
But even then, and we talk about it down the road, you got to throw out things like the Juan Soto trade and go, didn't the guy do just about as good as he could? Like, I mean, now I could also fill the other ledger. I could fill the other ledger of things, but I just think did a really good job on that trade so far.
Right. He did. And again, the idea being that their hand was forced. You would have to think they had to trade Juan Soto to accomplish what they needed to accomplish to frankly fill a 25 man roster. Right. Okay,
I don't want to make this like Juan Soto wasn't the problem any right. more than like anything else was the problem.
Right.
You already had Juan Soto in your clubhouse and on your team.
Right.
Like, you know, I mean, I had a hard time ripping Juan Soto having a 950 OPS with the Padres. Right. But the fact is, go look at his walk rate and his hit rate and his home run rate with the mm-hmm. Yankees. And he's back to being the Juan Soto the Padres thought they were going to get. Like, right. like that's what the heck, Juan? And then, you know, Juan had his ways here too. Again, reluctant to talk about it even because it's not going to put it on Juan Soto. But you all, to the point you made, you weren't going to keep Juan Soto. It was $33 million. And you already had him. And right. like, you know, look, if they'd won the World Series last year or even gone to the NLCS again with Juan Soto, I don't know. I don't know what that would have affected with Juan. They still had the money issues. Right. But the fact is you didn't. So, yeah.
Right. And to say nothing of Juan Soto could be playing left field for them right now and probably mashing. Who the hell's pitching? Like, you know, it would have been a lot of flyer type guys.
What a great story when the Padres and Yankees are facing off in the World Series.
I like that. There we go. There we go. That's great. Hey, before we go, I always put you on the spot. Let's talk about Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I've been there a couple times. I think the world of it. Tell people about Pittsburgh who've never been.
It's green. It's beautiful. You come out of the tunnel from the airport and you go, wow, there's this big yellow bridges and old architecture and the rivers, but you see Swan River. And when you're at the ballpark, that's what you look out at. It is the ballpark itself is nothing special. Ask any baseball writer. And I think any fan who's been to a lot of ballparks, it's up there because of the views of Pittsburgh, not to mention the people in Western Pennsylvania. It's more Midwest than East Coast, mm-hmm. and they're good people, and there's good food. And I'm gushing because I want to like kind of go overboard on it because people look at me like I'm crazy when I talk about how much I love Pittsburgh. It's a fantastic place.
I think it's vaguely European. Like you're on a river, everything.
It's old school.
Green, very
on a hill.
Like stone buildings, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, that's very
it's
cool.
Really neat. The bridges are neat. It's fantastic.
That's very cool. Well, enjoy it. I know it probably doesn't compare to Cleveland and Nationals Park, but I'm sure that you'll enjoy Pittsburgh here. Padres, Pirates, 3-game series starting Tuesday. What is important is that the Padres don't face Paul Skeens.
That's it. We didn't go over the pitching, but it wouldn't have meant anything to you anyway. Face a couple lefties, some guys that have just been called up, and none of them are Paul Skeens. That's what you need to
know. Right on the backs of their jerseys. It says not Skeens on the back. So there we go. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.